CFYLP is sponsored by CapturedPrey.com. Visit CapturedPrey.com today for all your import and third-party Transformers needs, and save even more through the Captured Prey Loyalty Program. You can also save on shipping on domestic orders of $150 or more. See website for details. CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prices, great service. Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com for all your vintage toy needs. You can also find Mega Toy Fan at popular robot and toy conventions year-round. Minimize your costs and maximize your collection with MegaToyFan.com.
Perceptia here. Welcome to Transformers for your listening pleasure. TFYLP for short. Join us and discuss the latest in Transformers fandom. Now, where did I put that chorus stop? Ratchet, will you take the chorus stop? Transformers! Defenders of
truth! Robots who fight in disguise! Hey, everybody.
Let's all start that.
It's TFYLP episode 184, or 184, 164. We're going to be talking today about some Combiner Wars and the Transformers movie.
No, not that one, the good one.
Exactly. I'm joined today by Headmaster Don.
Hey, everybody.
Maroni Prime.
Oh, shit, what are we going to do now?
Plasticon.
I'm back with a vengeance.
And Megamus.
What's up?
And it's been a while since those last two have been on the show. They've just sort of swapped places with me.
Yeah. But we missed you, Megamus. We don't really care about those guys, but...
Yeah, me.
I don't believe it.
Who cares about G2, right?
Exactly.
Right. Yeah.
The only thing I'm thinking, you know, rather than G2, pay the electric, man. Get some lights on in there. Crap, you're in the dark. Crap.
But well, that adds to his mysteriousness.
Exactly. Yeah, we'll go with that.
So what have you guys been up to? How's it been going?
Well,
anything
I got
interest?
I have a Massey at my foot. I'm sorry, I didn't mean to step on you, Massey, but you didn't tell me you was a layer on my feet.
Yeah.
I got in something from that guy right there, Plasticon, right there. Haven't had a chance to open him yet.
Me?
Yes.
Me?
Complete Glacial Lord. Thank you, sir.
Ooh.
Awesome.
Hey, you're welcome, man.
Yes. And an unexpected thing in the box. I told him not to send it because I was just not... His custom Headmaster RC from a Chrome Dome mold. So,
nice.
So you're welcome, sir.
Thank
and that
you.
That is, and everybody can hear this. That is a gift. You don't owe me a dime.
Just remember. Anytime that you get something from Jason, you're always going to get a little head extra for free.
That
was so easy.
God. That's exactly what she said.
It's especially wonderful because the mold is from a Chrome Dome, so that just makes it that much better.
Free dome.
Keep it
head.
Yeah, keep it classy there, TFYLP. Keep it classy.
Hey, I'm talking about Transformers. What are you talking about?
Anyway, I got that. I got a package from Amazon earlier in the week. It included a new book from the Streets of Apollo by Alona Andrews. I also picked up a Generations Tankor because it was cheap. And I got the Grimlock recolored as G1 Grimlock for Robots in Disguise. Haven't opened it yet, but it looks great in robot mode. Can't wait to open it up.
Oh, you're talking about the new RID.
Yeah, the RID 2.0.
Not the construction vehicle.
I've only watched like 3 episodes of that show, and now I have like 17 episodes sitting on my DVR. I've not even gotten to it.
It really is not bad. I'm a little miffed at them for a decision they made in their lack of casting, which I have discussed on RSC without not getting my blood pressure up again over it. But I believe everyone knows what that is, so I won't repeat it here. But
what?
He wants you to repeat it, though.
No,
I'm not paying him. But your window is up. You can land your window. Yeah, he likes to land his window when he can't go out. But see,
so Glacier Lord gives us a great segue right into a few days ago. The Collectors Club put up the pre-orders for the subscription service 4.0. which is the Mayhem Attack Squad and Impactor, which are all based off of Combiner Wars figures.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Any of you guys looking forward to this? Any of you guys planning on getting this?
I'm on the fence. I really am. I didn't read a lot of UK stuff, and I still haven't read a lot of UK stuff, so the Mayhem Attack Squad and the Wreckers really do not have a big must-get feel from me. But I do own the Ruination version of the Fallous Arbitron Bruticus, and I really don't want to have to go back and piece a good look. If the combiner looks as good as I'm hoping it'll look for the subscription service, plus if they're trying to keep it to a made-to-order numbers, it's going to be a bear to complete on the backside, and I really don't want to go through that and not have a combiner in my collection that could be pretty good. Mm-hmm.
I'm a little indifferent as well. I'm wanting to focus on the main line as the priority. Defensor, Devastator, and later on we get like Skyrain and all them. So I'm just kind of relegating that to kind of a back burner possibility. But I'm not ruling it out altogether.
It's not a fact that I want to get it as for who they are. Which may be kind of bad, but for the fact that if they look good and going back to get them will be impossible.
Mm.
So there's that.
I guess it would come down to if whether or not they limit the numbers, because it hasn't been too hard to find the other subscription services. I guess we'll see how that happens this year.
Yeah.
Since they're still releasing 3.0, and we haven't seen if there's going to be anything that goes up on the club for us to buy, or if it's going to end up on like popular retails, or how long it's going to stick around.
Yeah.
But
the club did tweet that there's no Serpent ORs left, along with Circuit. It was Zap, the Car Zap, and Car one Zap? Other one.
Oh, the one that came with GB Blackrock. Creon?
Yeah. Car Zap, Serpent OR, and I don't know.
Well, so far, it's only been 3 that have released, right? So it was Nacelle that just came out.
That turned out a lot better than I thought it would, as far as just the unique color scheme.
So I hate that mold. When they announced 2 Seekers in that set,
I didn't
care for it.
When you talk about mold fatigue, that's the poster child for mold fatigue.
Exactly. Yeah, it's the problem I have with it is that it doesn't stand well. But it's definitely if that's the case, then I need to find someone who wants to sell me a Tarantulas, because I really want that Tarantulas.
I have to say, when I first saw that they were naming that an SL, I was expecting a pretty heavy Star Trek vibe off of that, but I was kind of disappointed.
Well, it's based off of an Italian figure, right, or something like that.
I don't know if it was that or if it was like one of the Diaclone.
No, actually, it was an early prototype
Okay.
That was in a production catalog, I believe, unless Brett can correct me on that. I thought that's what it was. But what you can do is when Skylings comes out, you can buy two nacelles and just tie them to his backside.
What for?
But yes, that was in a catalog, if I remember correctly.
Okay.
You're correct.
Yeah, and for those viewers and listeners that don't know, nacelle is the title of like the main thruster, the engine things that hang off the back of the Enterprise, the warp nacelles.
Yeah, so. I was very lost by that, so thank you.
And knowing is half the battle.
E.I. Go.
Transformers. So, wrong show, man.
So Brett, Jason, are you guys? Are you guys looking into getting the Mayhem Attack Squad? Is it a maybe, a no?
I really hate to break it to you, but I only collect Generation 2 anymore. I've completely nixed my entire collection down to collecting nothing but G2. Nothing there's Generation 2, so I won't get them. But the only thing that kind of puts me off is, in the future, are they going to end up having a G2 combiner come just strictly out of the club? A full combiner.
Might as well.
You know, and I think that's not going to be a question of if, but when, especially if they're looking for a good box set. So, yeah. I think that's going to be
a... Stuff, the Combiner Wars stuff is like box set gold for the club.
It is.
You would think. It's already five figures that have, you know, with one larger figure and four deluxes. I won't be surprised if we get several combiners over the next few years.
Well, right now you got the Superion that's obviously going to come out in a box set. This G2, and the same thing with the Minasaur. Now we all know Hasbro's trend, so we know we're going to probably end up getting a G2 Verticus. But the only thing that's really driving me crazy is: are we going to get that Generation 2 Defensor?
I would bank on it.
Yeah. Well, what I'm thinking is, with the G2 set at BotCon, Jason, what year was that? Again, it's all blended together for me. I can't keep track anymore.
That was 2010.
That was 2010. Wow. If they look up at doing a sequel set in that same universe, that would be a perfect box set for a continuation of that universe.
With
them doing like the, say, because you had that Redux set, if they decide to do this, they're obviously going to have to do something else other than the two they already announced. Yeah. Because if they're going to release both of those as like club exclusives, honestly, how many are they going to produce?
Well, those are actually retail exclusives. I don't think they're club exclusives.
Do we know what retail are? We have no idea yet.
Yeah.
I heard it mentioned, what I read from the press, or not the press, but the their panel at BotCon was sort of a... the box sets are going to be released sort of in the same style as the fifth limbs were for Superion and Minasaur, where it was more focused on like online retailers, but not necessarily stores like, you know, Capture Prey, BBTS, or, you know, TF Source. But
so otherwise, the Toys R Us exclusive, or possibly Amazon.
Like Walmart.com site to store type of thing.
Yeah, something like that, or even Target and stuff like that. It was a little more widespread than, you know, releasing it to the, like, you know, retailers.
Well, here's something else.
For specialty retailers.
Yeah, well, two things. Michael, I just put in the chat a link to TFW 2005. I'd forgotten. This may have been what I had seen last week or so. It's a render of the Collector's Club combiner from the round table at BotCon.
Hey, it looks like a mock-up.
Yeah, well, it looks like a render to me.
Looks like a Digibash to me.
Yeah, I'm thinking it's a Digibash.
Yeah. And also, too, for the if they don't do a G2 Defensor, but they need a combiner for another set, they can always redo it as Guard City.
Yeah.
Which
this is my question, though. If they're going to do a Guard City, they're going to have to give us a Battle Gaia. And honestly, really, truthfully, how many Transformer collectors really even know about those?
Right, but
a very small market on that one.
I don't.
Right, but that's what I'm saying about it being a BotCon Collectors Club exclusive, because they're trying to make these niche characters like Old Master. I had to look up and see. I was there when they showed Old Master originally. I don't remember it. I had to look it up when it was actually shown for BotCon this year. Mm-hmm. So if they're looking for niche stuff that will appeal to the collector's sense of uniqueness for the convention, you couldn't get much more than unique than Guard City and Battle Gaia. Just saying.
That's true.
That's true, but then again, I'm kind of like looking at all these combiners, and I'm like, where's our train bots? I'm sorry, but you've got plenty of train bots you can make. For God's sake, Hasbro, get off your ass. I want train bots.
Ryden and Rail Racer come to mind.
Right.
Well, I mean, not just RID, but you know, I mean, you've got the MicroMaster ones. You had two different ones.
Six liner.
Yeah.
Plus
Ryden. Or they could repaint easily.
Plus, if you think outside the box and you look at, if you want to take a color pattern from Brave, how many Brave trains do you have? Liner Dagwon, Super Liner Dagwon.
That would be cool, but I hate to say it, I wouldn't see him doing that. I could see them doing the Diaclone variant with the Chrome Bullet Train. I could see that.
If they're looking for color schemes that the collectors would get the homage to, but something different, a different color figure, but they could do that as a collector's like. We're not mentioning it. This is not anything important to our core audience. But hey, collectors, this paint scheme is for y'all.
Okay, this is my question, though. Have they ever, in the past, did any toys that even remotely looked like Brave?
Well, that's just it. I think they, with Ultra Magnus having such an ex-Kaiser feel, to me, to a degree, Takara needs to be looking at Brave for more inspiration. To me, anyway, but that's my opinion.
Well, I see where you're getting at with that, but to be honest, they could be also looking at the Diaclone stuff, because think about what they're about to do in Japan. They're about to release all the old Diaclone in super articulation.
Right.
And that might be where they were looking toward. When they thought about, you know, the little drivers and stuff like that, when they came out with it. Plus, it was in the comic book. So a lot of the stuff we have been seeing in the comic book, but G2 is like one of those niche things. You only have certain people that collect that.
Mm-hmm.
Well, but you also have only certain people collecting Diaclone.
I'm just looking at it from Diaclone is a – It's better known as the predecessor of Transformers in the U.S. In Japan, it has a lot of nostalgic value with collectors, and I understand that. But from a time period, it's a very short window of time that it was in existence compared to 9 years of Brave. So I'm just saying they've got a lot more source material they can pull from. It may not be as well known, but it's there. As a source of information and colors and design themes and character ideas for 9 years worth that you can draw from, that would be brand new to 75% of the collecting population.
That's true. So, Brett, what do you think of this stuff? Because I know he hasn't said anything. Now he's asleep there, the old man.
Well, he's pondering.
I was waiting for you to freaking finish. Because he asked me a question, and I was just waiting for you to finish. So, you know, 25 minutes later, am I going to get that set? Yes. I think it's a good set. I like the idea.
It's a good set.
It is. It's a good set. I do. I like the characters in it. I only hope that they put a really good backstory to it that makes sense as to why they combine. But I also look back to the last club combiner, and it's one of my favorites. I love that set. Translucent red all the way through. I mean, beautiful. Yep. Took me 5 years to complete it. I still remember that, and I did. You know, and it was great. I loved it.
Oh, and just as a warning to the younger viewers watching us, ask your mother and father's permission before you look up that name.
What? Look up name or Nexus Maximus?
Nexus Maximus.
The original name for Nexus
yeah.
Prime.
But the cool thing is, Brett, I agree with you, because this is sort of like the BotCon sets to me. The fiction will help make or break the character.
Exactly.
And if they're creating a combiner in response to the Wreckers creating Ruination from the Fall of Cybertron line, that would be a great hint of continuity through these past couple of years, as we've seen the combiners get better from the flawed but good attempt of FOC to what we have now. So I'm hoping you're right for the backstory, and I'm hoping they remember they can tie it back into the Mayhem Attack Squad as a counterbalance to Ruination.
Here's what I'm wondering about that Fall of Cybertron Ruination, and connecting a more recent set of figures to that release, is I'm wondering if it's too far removed, if too much time has passed for that to really work effectively. What I mean is, since we have the new Combiner Wars Bruticus mold on the way, it would almost make more sense to repaint that Bruticus mold to resemble the RID Ruination, just as the Fallout Cybertron mold was also painted as the Wreckers to resemble RID Ruination as well. But then if they did that, would that be the Wreckers Ruination, or would that be RID Ruination? Would that be Rollbar and Move-War and Mega Octane in them? So, I mean, they could go either way with that same paint scheme and still have the same combiner name. So that kind of makes you wonder.
Yeah. That is pretty interesting. I didn't think of it that way.
I mean, we got Skybite recently in Generations, so, they might lean more toward the RID 1.0 incarnation of Ruination. And being that it's a Scramble City-style mold that heralds back to the G1 Bruticus, that would almost make more sense to do that.
Kind of makes me wonder if they're possibly going to do the tiger-striped one and the winter.
Yeah, I was just thinking about that.
Too.
They'd have to round off the nose cones, though.
That's true. I mean, just a slight remold. But they've been doing remolds to almost everything, so mm-hmm. I don't see why they couldn't.
I don't think we would see those anytime soon. That would be something that maybe 5 years from now they have. Yeah,
that would have to be like a retailer exclusive or something, like BBTS did with Veronicon or something.
Because at this point, I mean, all those molds have been used. I think by the time that Bruticus comes out, most of the molds will have been used,
yeah,
like at the minimum of 4 times, with the Blades mold having been used, I think something like 6 times.
6, I think.
Yeah, but you also have the motorcycle that barely any of us has touched or even seen.
Well, the motorcycle is so far is still Takara
exclusive.
So far. Yeah, but we also supposed to be getting we're getting a scatter shot, so what do you think they're probably going to end up using for Lightspeed?
Or Afterburner.
They very well could. That's assuming that they actually give us the rest of the limbs for Computron.
Yeah. This will be Betatron. I'm still not sure what to think about that.
I heard that listening to others, I've heard that the Betatron was not their final name, and that it was a play. That it was a play on, in the software world, you have a beta before you have an actual release. So there's sort of I heard it was Hasbro playing around with the whole, you know, Computron, you know, computers, betas and all that stuff.
But Groove aside, you know, putting him off to the side for a minute, and the rumored sketches we've seen for a space shuttle blastoff, just putting those aside for right now, these molds are getting a lot of use, which is why they were created as they were. Mm-hmm. But is the fatigue setting in?
Well, I mean, if you think about it, though, I mean, if Hasbro's putting all this money into those, like, these skeletons, just put it that way, just the skeleton design, I could see why they would be trying to milk the molds as much as they possibly can. But really, what else are they going to really replace these Skylinks at? So we haven't even touched yet, you know. And that actually looks like it has a complete different transformation than the rest of them.
Yeah.
Well, see, I think Skylinks is like that one that can be singular because they've made so much reuse of everything else. Saved money. I mean, they very well might. It'll be interesting to see what they could do with Skylinks, since Skylinks is such a unique character in, you know, in Transformers. Is there anything else that he could really become?
Yes.
That Robot in disguise, sense? Galvatron, or Megatron?
No. This is what I want to see him as. In purple, white, and a lavender, as the Griffin from Aerial Assault.
I'd be okay with that.
I don't know what that is.
That's hilarious.
Quick to the Google image search.
Quickly, just remold his head as a pony and put Pegasus wings on it and slap a freaking rainbow on its butt.
Now you realize if they did that, nobody would have a chance. A snowball's chance of getting a hold of the figure because all the Brony fandom would snatch it up so fast.
That would be the mass release.
But here's the thing, though. That could be a good little crossover toy since a lot of companies are trying to make gender neutral toys. There's no reason that couldn't be an example into that category. You paint it one way as the Griffin. You paint it another way as a, say it's a magical creation for battling disharmony, or whatever the case may be.
Here's something out of left field. Just something just popped into my brain. You know, as radically different as the Skylinks mold is, what if they were to remold different aspects of it and keep you know the main, you know, skeleton, I suppose, the same? What if we ended up with the Robo Smasher? Think back to City of Steel. Or not City of Steel, Secret of Omega Supreme. Back on Cybertron, the first corrupt of the Constructicons.
Kind of like more of like a hentai kind of thing.
It depends on the molding.
Yeah. And Michael, I put the link in the chat so people like you who do not know what the awesome purple Griffin from Aerial Assault is can see what it is.
Considering you're a Beast Wars fan, you probably would actually appreciate this one.
Hey, that's Griffin. A good thing. I didn't think
only,
about that.
Only if it has a flowing mane.
Well, as a matter sweet. Of fact, take a picture.
Oh, well, that's what I'm saying. The figure, if a figure has a flowing mane. It's got to be real. I want to be able to brush his hair like I can brush you know, Mott Kick's hair.
You know, the more I look at this thing,
my little sideburn.
The more I look at this thing, I almost wonder if maybe they designed this with Skylinks in mind and just didn't know quite how to implement it just yet.
Yeah, but y'all see what I'm getting at? How that you could get that from Skylinks pretty easily.
I think so.
Oh, definitely.
Get one of those Knights of Unicron hair pieces. And put on it.
Oh, God, yes. Yes. Hey, Brett, use your awesome contacts at Hasbro and make this happen. Because I know you know people that know people with vast powers at their fingertips.
I do know people that know people, but it's usually for something else. But that's okay. All right.
No Pickens Anonymous.
Yeah, we'll go with that.
Sure.
Say it again, Axel.
It again.
But so as it goes for mold fatigue, like personally, right now I'm not really feeling it. Like when they've shown, you know, the reuses already for the Combaticons, like reusing Swerve, or not Swerve, Swindle, as Hound and stuff like that. And even though that mold itself is based off the Rook mold, You know, I'm seeing all these variations, and yeah, while they're the same figure, I actually got to the point where I'm actually looking at selling off parts of my Generations collection in favor of the Combiner Wars figures, because I'm actually enjoying them so much. Because even though it's a bunch of the same figures, and the only one I'm really feeling a bit of fatigue on is the Blades mold, because of how little they've remolded it, I feel like they've remolded everything else enough that it doesn't really bother me.
Well, I have to say one thing. I mean, so if you're selling, say, Generations Ironhide, which is, to me, not the best representation of the character, but you look at Combiner Wars Ironhide, which is not the best looking representation of the character, aren't you kind of just trading even? I mean, do you like? I mean, I'm just curious. Do you like the Combiner Wars Ironhide better?
With the Combiner
Wars. It reminds me of that the Transformers Prime Ironhide that I had. The Ars Micron. It literally reminded me of that, and I'm like, that's kind of cool that they're doing that. But couldn't they have done the same thing they're doing with, you know, Trailbreaker, where you got some crazy thing that clicks on that actually makes it look more like a van or something?
You know, it's almost like a just a little bit of a blend of G1 with kind of the movie style, the way the chest is all made up and everything.
Mm-hmm.
Well, and see, it doesn't. Yeah, that doesn't really bother me too much. I do think that of the three that are coming, or the four that are coming out here recently, being, you know, Prowl, Mirage, Sunstreaker, and Ironhide, I do think Ironhide is the weakest of that group. But I did like him more as, I do like him more as a pickup truck than I did as a van. It sort of fits his sort of rough cowboy like personality. I really liked that Prime design. I didn't like the Prime toy. I liked the Prime design, so it really doesn't bother me too much. I think the only thing Ironhide has going against him is that he's a bit skinny. But like with Prowl, I'm not a very big fan of the Universe Prowl mold. And so this new Combiner Wars Prowl, I'm all for it. I think it looks better than...
I mean, it's like the proportions of a lot of these actually work. I know a lot of people don't like the breakdown, but to be honest, really, what are you going to do with, like, you know, the rear chunks of a car? And you're going to have articulated legs, and those fold inside, especially with the price point and all the engineering. I mean, I can kind of forgive it for that, you know. Yeah. But, I mean, if you're using it for, you know, like Streetwise, stuff like that, that's actually kind of a cool way of reusing that mold, especially that we're getting a modern, you know, a modern Sunstreaker. I mean, what world are we living in when we get something that almost looks like the G1 toy, but it doesn't have parts leprosy?
Yeah. Well, yeah, he's even, because they remolded the foot, didn't they, to look like his intakes? Like, you, that's a
brand new. Well, the breakdown, literally, it's the same mold.
Yeah, you can identical. Do it in the back.
The breakdown actually clicks onto the back. I don't have mine up handy.
I've got mine right here. Give me the second.
It does have those intakes, doesn't it?
Right.
Yeah, the foot looks like the intakes. And it actually clicks onto that.
It definitely looks like the one that came with them already. But even that is like some might complain that it's not, and it's maybe it isn't perfect, but I think it's that's a totally remolded foot because it has like the engine and the intakes. So that, I mean, that's
right here.
That's really cool.
There's the engine and the intakes right there.
Oh, I guess I never paid
attention. I was going to show you. And if you notice on the sides here, you have these slots there on either side, and they actually slide in. I can't see through my own hand here. Slide in there. Actually, I'll just put it in. Just kind of flip everything back up there out of the way, and you can slide the whole thing, and it just rests in there like that.
Yet another undocumented feature from the lack of instructions.
Now, keep in mind, I'm not positive on the thumb placement. That might be different. But, I mean,
I actually want to say it flips around the other way, but I don't.
Let me try it.
But, I mean, it just goes to show you that, you know, Hasbro actually did put some thought and engineering into these things, although a lot of people don't like the hands and feet. But look at what they're doing with the Victorion, is that what it's name?
Yeah.
Is?
Yeah.
They're dealing with that. They're giving us a whole new set of feet. And to be honest,
I think
that's the big thing is ankle tilts. They're trying to keep us from having to go out and go to Fans Project and stuff like that and get these new add-ons. They're trying to avoid that. So I hate to say it, I could see Hasbro just releasing an accessory pack to fix that.
Yeah, it's unlikely.
And honestly, I don't say that's unlikely. Look at what they used to do for G.I. Joe.
That's
accessory
true.
Packs all the time.
Maybe
tons of
club.
Accessory packs. It might be an online exclusive thing, but they might just do it.
Okay, I think I got it.
It's never been
the engine facing back and just flip the thumb up. I think that's pretty well how it's going to go.
Yeah,
looks a lot better than the thumb sticking out.
I'm not saying this to get on a tangent or anything, but again, this is an example of, even though the instructions have gotten a lot better with the Combiner Wars, if these are meant to be lifted as Easter eggs, that's cool, but I would have never looked for that, because to me, that's not really something I would look for weapon storage, because he'd be carrying it as a gun, or it would just be off in a pile. And I wish, it's like on Generation Cyclonus. To me, that's an Easter egg, because when you tilt his hand in, you have the Target Master peg that he can hold the gun like the Japanese Target Masters, which was shown to me, and I had no idea. And to me, that's an Easter egg to the fans. But when this is left out, which is actual storage for a part to keep it from being lost, that's something that needs to be in the instructions. I'm just saying, I just wanted to point that out.
I think the reason they left it out on Breakdown is because Breakdown doesn't have that on his back.
Yeah.
There's a possibility, because how many of us have seen Sunstreaker's instructions yet? We haven't. So it could be actually in his instructions only.
Oh, that's true, too. That's true.
You have to think of it that way. They're doing it character-wise, then maybe that's why.
I wonder what variant head that we'll end up getting a sneak preview of when we finally see Sunstreaker's instructions. You know how we used to be able to see who's coming down the pipeline?
They're definitely going to have to end up giving us a sideswipe since they gave us a Sunstreaker.
I think so too. It's probably going to have Breakdown's head.
So. I will be happy to finally replace those crappy universe versions of Sideswipe.
Those are fine. There's nothing wrong with those.
Translucent plastic unnecessarily as part of the net mechanisms of the inner torso on both figures. Subject to breaking, chipping, cracking, and everything else.
Oh. Okay.
Also, they're just
ruined forever.
To bet I'm only after like maybe a couple of those molds for G2, but that's it.
Yeah, look at the break. I don't know if you can see it too well. Look at the breakdown head a little closer, and you can kind of see how they'd get a sideswipe out of that head mold without necessarily remolding it. Just repaint it.
Yeah, they could easily repaint that thing.
Yeah, they very well could.
I think it'll work.
Hey, guys, we got a question from this from Twitter. Do we want to do this now? Or
go ahead.
Okay. All right, this is from Albie at Daily Durian. I'm guessing maybe he's a fan of Kamen Rider Gaim with that name. I'm not sure. Says hi guys. Where does the panel think there is a gap in TF fan art?
Where do we think there's a gap in TF
fan art? Albie, can you post a follow up on that? I'm not quite sure where you're going with that. As far as what the artwork that we're seeing versus, like, why is it better than some of the art we're getting on the products?
Well, I think what he's asking is where would we like to see some fan art that we haven't seen fan art of? I'm not entirely sure. You know what we're missing? Where we're missing fan art? Freaking Rodimus Prime.
Yes. Yes, definitely. We need Rodimus Prime submissions. Rodimus Prime.
Exactly. Rodimus,
yes.
That's still a thing, guys. You can win something from Rick Alvarez.
I think we only got one entry and one that came from one of Rick's artists.
Because remember, Rick Alvarez's toy vault is like a vertical Uncle Scrooge money bin just laying on its side.
They didn't end too well for Peter Griffin.
And if you dive into it, you'll get paper cuts and
it's a solid
lacerations.
There's no soft edges there.
No soft edges. But when you dive in, it's all those Beast Machine toys, and they just cut you by default.
Hey. You might lose an eyeball.
Beast Machines is awesome.
Yeah, because remember, a lot of the missiles in there are not pre-kid friendly.
No, they're not.
So yes, please send us in more Rodimus Primal.
Mm-hmm. All right, since we brought up Rodimus, we might as well go into what is going to be the remaining topic tonight. That starred a similarly named character. Why don't you go ahead and take us away, Jim?
Jim, take us away. Jim's this guy.
Jim's new name is Calgon.
Calgon, take us away. That's the first thing that came into my head when he said that.
I thought it was Axel. No?
No, I don't have the dreadlocks.
Told you, young Axel.
Nah.
That rusted years ago. So something to do with spaghetti, I think. I don't remember.
Baldy.
Right. One of the things we were wanting to discuss tonight was what is possibly one of the most iconic things to happen in Transformers history. It was the release 29 years ago, just this past weekend of the 8th, of the Transformers the movie. I was specific, the Transformers the movie, which came out on August 8th, 1986, to theaters nationwide, and started what would be many, many, many years of therapy for children all across the world. Much like our parents' generation with John Kennedy, we can kind of relate when we ask ourselves, where were you when Optimus Prime was shot?
Yeah, and with all due respect aside, it's not as culturally significant, but it is the closest parallel you can actually get for a lot of people that was not alive when Kennedy was shot.
This is true.
But it's that same kind of, you don't believe it.
Yeah, it was more for our generation.
That's kind of like that. That comedy episode that some of us have seen, you know, where the kid just like flips out and then he gets his grandpa to dress up as Optimus to try to make his own movie.
Oh yeah, the Goldbergs.
The Goldbergs, yeah, yes. That was epic.
Yeah, I feel sorry for the kid.
Shout out to Ryan Wick. Thank you for hooking me up to see that. That was awesome.
Yes. I feel sorry for the kid in Christmas of 85 that got a bunch of Transformers toys that ended up dying 8 months later.
You know. But we still collect them.
Well, anywho.
Optimus will always be a flat-nosed semi. It can never be anything else. Then G2 Laser Rod, then G2 Laser Rod came out and just smashed it all.
Right.
And he's been everything else since then.
Wait, has he been a gun? He has never been a gun, has he?
He's been a pen.
Yeah.
It's mightier than a sword.
Sword.
He's been a pen, a shoe, a hat.
A PlayStation.
A potato. Exactly. He's been a potato twice.
Yeah.
He's been a rat truck, a kitty truck.
He's been around.
He's been a dinosaur. He's been a dinosaur.
This is true. A bat. He's been a terror that flaps in the
city.
Night. But anywho, the Transformers the movie. I say it was one of the most iconic events in Transformers history because it did a lot of things that had never at that point up till then been done. Probably one of the most notable which was it brought in to a movie for children, for children's cartoon series, a bunch of A-list actors. You have Robert Stack as Ultra Magnus, Eric Idle as Wreck-Gar, you know, just on and on. Orson Welles, I mean, freaking Citizen Kane, okay?
Orson Welles was his very last performance.
That was his final role, was as the planet Unicron.
Leonard Nimoy as Galvatron.
Yes, yes. And I can kind of appreciate, going back to Orson Welles briefly, that his last role would be as something like Unicron, given that he was also famous for doing the War of the Worlds broadcast in the early 20th century and causing kind of a mass panic across the nation, just over the radio broadcast.
Kinda is the understatement. There were people that literally committed suicide on that day when he did that.
Yeah, I was trying to gloss that over, but it was pretty chaotic. So why not make him the Chaos Bringer? But I mean, we had so many stars come in for this. And as Don said, Leonard Nimoy, who's famous for playing Mr. Spock on Star Trek, which was another iconic science fiction series that, honestly, in my opinion, helped make something like Transformers happen in the first place. It was just a wonderful thing. It was the first, I believe, motion picture based on a children's series to go to theaters, if I'm not mistaken. I don't recall any, like the Scooby-Doo movies or any, I don't think those ever went to theaters. I think those were just TV specials. And also, it killed off your main hero character.
Oh, yeah.
It killed off everything that existed before.
Yeah, it killed off a lot of them, sure. You know, Windcharger, you know, on and on. Braun is debatable. He got shot in the shoulder, but still. But it used an entire sequence, and there was even a full scene specifically for the death of Optimus Prime. It was maybe 3-4 minutes long of him saying his final goodbyes and passing the Matrix to Ultra Magnus, which would later then go to Hot Rod.
Here's the thing. I'm going to bring this up.
Sure.
I was there. I didn't watch it in retrospect. I was in the theater.
You could have saved him.
Yeah. I tried clapping and it didn't work. But I was in the theater with my cousins. I was 16. Just a young lad of 16. And you're so stunned by the death of Ironhide and Ratchet and Prowl in the shuttle. You're so stunned. By the time you get to Wheeljack and Windcharger, it just about doesn't register. It does, but you're still trying to process that these are characters that you have just seen in the TV show be fine after getting shot. And then Megatron blows his entire upper torso off for Ironhide and probably the entire bottom of the ship. And then you're so OD'd on trying to process this stuff, Prime dies. And the entire movie, you're left with a sense of, I can't believe this just happened. And, you know, I wasn't crying. I wasn't screaming. I heard kids crying in the theater, if I remember correctly. But I was just stunned that this was a thing that was happening. And it was just something that I didn't process it till later on in the day when I was home. And it was like, that really happened. You know, if Prime is gone, and then all these characters on my shelf, they're gone. And it's like,
except Grimlock.
So Bumblebee lived.
Well, you can call that living.
But the Prime was great. But yeah, it's just watching it in retrospect and knowing what happens. Kind of, and knowing that he comes back later on, watching it from the future, going back to the past to watch it is one thing. Being there when it happened is an experience that you cannot replicate. I mean, if you've got kids that haven't seen it, and you watch them and they're familiar with the G1 mythos, and you show them the movie, that's probably as close as you're going to get to seeing the reaction of all of us in the theater when that happened. Yeah. It was just – and it had repercussions, didn't it, guys?
No, it did.
So I have to ask, did it affect your, I guess, attachment to the brand after that happened, after you saw it?
Actually, season 3 – did a lot more damage to my love of the series than the movie ever did, just because the episodes were so badly animated. Again, there's some good gems in season 3. We've talked about this before. I never was at a point where I wanted to stop collecting, but seeing these new characters in these bad animation episodes I was like not in a rush to get them. Like a must get kind of thing as I was before the movie. I don't think it was like, oh, these guys replaced my old favorites. It wasn't like that. It's like, oh, it's these new guys. And in the shows, they look like crap. So it was just kind of a, I may get him, I may not get him. Of course, I was 17 and living at home. And I kind of had to take this stuff in past my dad, because he didn't appreciate me spending my money on toys. So thank God for book bags. Ah. So there's that. But just being the old guy of the group, it didn't affect me like I'm sure it affected some younger kids. But it was like nothing will be the same at this point until we get to Return of Optimus Prime. They're like, oh, yeah, of course.
And that's exactly who you'll be.
So what about the rest of you guys? When, you know, when was it that you saw the movie, and like, how did it affect you guys' like perception of the brand? Because I'm coming at it from a totally different view. I mean, my first exposure to it was the Rhino VHS in like 2002.
That one.
Exactly. So my perspective is a lot is much different. on the movie than the rest of you guys, so I'm sort of interested in you guys' take.
Well, this is not really anything major, but when the Transformers the movie came out, I had been 3 years old for 4 days. however, I can actually remember one scene, seeing it in the theater, right, which is weird because I was, you know, three. And it was the most obscure of things. I don't know why I remember this over, you know, Optimus' death or Unicron transforming or anything. What I remembered was Springer reaching out of the shuttle, yelling the name RC, and then this pink robot running up and jumping in. That's my memory. That's it.
Yeah, it's weird the things that stick with you. Like,
yeah.
My earliest memory of Transformers is not actually Beast Wars. It's some of the old G2 commercials for toys.
Oh, God, you're making me feel old, guys.
Dude,
please. God. Oh, I feel old. Someone get off my lawn.
Well, but you.
Hey,
you
I mean, when.
Yeah, you Geritol.
When the 86 movie came out, my parents. The zygotes that would become me hadn't even split. So, I mean, I was still 2 years off from even being a thing, so. So my.
What a thing you have become.
Exactly. So, how about you, Jason, or Brett?
Go ahead, Brett.
No, go ahead. Okay, I'm saving mine because I'm going to surprise you.
Okay. Oh. Well, when I got to see it, I was like 12, 13 years old. I didn't actually go see it in the theater. I'd watched a lot of the reruns of the cartoons and stuff like that, and I heard like through friends that happened, and I'm like, you know, okay. But you know, when I was young, I was like collecting not just Transformers. I was into Micro Machines, G.I. Joe. Lego was like my big thing. I did have several Transformers, but Lego was like a big thing for me when I was a kid. And I think the main reason why I had the attachment was because back when I was much younger, my mother used to make sure I got like Lego and stuff like that when I was like, you know, 6, 7 years old, and she passed, and that's why I have such a connection to Lego. But the thing is, I didn't really get as many Transformers as some kids. Like, one of the very first ones I ever got, obviously, was Bumblebee. But the when it comes to, like, the impact of the movies and stuff, it was more or less the cartoon series that impacted me bigger than the movie did. But when I did get to see it and finally got to see it, I was blown away by just the animation alone.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, why is the cartoon not like this? And then you see that opening for what was it? Was it season? Yeah, season four. The opening for season four. I'm like, oh my God, this is so cool. And then you go into season four and I'm like, what happened to the cell animation? What happened to all the dark shading and the awesome like skids? And, you know, it looked like they're like skateboarding it when they're coming into like attack crap.
A lot of that was from the commercials, wasn't it?
Yeah, well, actually, all of it was. Well, No. Towards the end, they switch over to some of the reuse from season.
Well, they had the Target Masters and stuff like that coming.
Yeah, but
that sequence.
Yeah, but towards the end, they had Blaster transforming with the ocean. Turning into the water with the Sharktacon, so that's still, you know. But, yeah, at the beginning, it was all commercial animation.
Yeah, I mean, it was just unbelievable. I was like, why does it not look like this? But then again, I did buy a lot of the comics. I read a lot of the comics. And that's the one thing that really kept me grounded because, you know, obviously, when we were kids, when the TV was turned on, normally their parents had control. You had your little bitty time, and that's about all you had. And the rest of the time, it was toys and comics and your friends. They didn't have the internet. We didn't have cell phones. If we had a phone, we actually had to ask our parents if we could use it. So
put your finger in the hole, turn the dial, wait for it to go back.
Rotary dial, zeros and the numbers. Yes. And when your parents wanted the channel changed, you had to get up and actually turn a dial.
Yeah.
Turn a dial. Yeah. No and push button.
And you hated when everybody had zeros in their number.
Well,
here's a quick question for you. When you watched the movie for the first time, Were you at all disappointed that none of the characters in anywhere in the movie were in their G2 colors?
Yes.
Okay.
But the one thing that really kind of blew me away, though, is, like, you know, a few years later, I found out about some of the stuff that did not make it into the movie, like Ultra Magnus and the Diaclone colors, and I'm like, why the hell did they pick those colors? It was so much better in red, white, and blue. I'm sorry, but it was.
Well, Ultra Magnus is basically Transformers Captain America, if you think about it.
Well, he is, but I'm like, that was so much better.
He is, but then his most famous line for, you know, a good, well, still up to this day is, I can't deal with that now.
And really, if you look at that line, it's not him showing a weakness. It's literally he has to focus on the people. He can't do anything. They have crashed. They have apparently died. He has these people left he's trying to keep alive. So for so many years, Ultraman is grieved because he can't deal with it, not from the standpoint of I'm blocking it out and I'm not pretending it not happened. It's like they're dead. They've crashed. They can't do jack. I got people. I got to keep alive here. But here's the one thing about the movie that when I saw it originally, no Superion, no Minasaur, none of the late season, no Power Glide or tracks. That now there would have been in some of those deleted scenes that we've seen storyboards for. But that's what until I found out later the movie was actually in production early season 2. So that's why you don't have these characters. But that always bugged me up until I found out after post-internet why they weren't even in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
But then there's always the big case of the missing Snarl.
Yes.
You mean the Snarl that was there for like one scene for about 2 seconds?
In the background, you know, you if you had a VCR at the time, you could stop it and pause it and see it. But that's the only way you could do it.
You know what? But after all this time, when it comes down to it, it was really Sludge that didn't know what he was getting himself into.
Yep.
Yeah. And just to bring this up, when the Fans Toys version of Stomp comes out, there's supposed to be a second head for the dinosaur that you can swap out that has the eyes budging out of the head.
Yes.
So now you can recreate the scene with your Fans Toys Stomp and your Combiner Wars Devastator, possibly recreate it. Complete googly eyes.
I've already seen people doing that with, like, the G1s.
Yeah. Sorry, Brad. I didn't mean to run on Brad. I'm sorry.
It's all right.
What's I'm always like it that way.
The question is,
yeah, we know that.
Your experience with the movie and how it affected you.
How did it define you, the man you are today?
I've never seen it.
Straight up truth?
No, but I got everyone looking.
I'm like, no, there's no way in hell. You've been to too many cons. I know you've seen bits and pieces.
Hey, Brett.
Run into the background.
Yes. Now you've seen it.
I've seen it now.
Yeah.
There you go.
You know, that's the equivalent of Sonic saying, "Hey, look, I'm over there," and the robot's turning to look. That's the
he pulled a Bugs Bunny on us, man.
I didn't see it in the movies. I saw it in that nice VHS box that you have.
Yep.
That Rhino.
This one's FHE.
Yeah.
No,
this one's Rhino. And this is a Hartman DVD.
It wasn't a DVD.
Well, no.
It was probably the Rhino. And I remember seeing it
airing on televisions when I got to see it.
Yep. Edited.
Well, season 5 with Tommy Kennedy and Power Master Prime did cut it up into a 5-part series.
Well, so that probably So since you didn't see it in theaters, that probably puts you in the camp of Lamont Howard here says that he remembers after the movie for years arguing with friends about the S-bomb that was dropped in theaters that was left out of the VHS release.
Yeah, that I didn't know about until later as well.
Yep.
Yeah, so...
Like, what? It actually cussed? That's like the coolest thing ever when I found out about that.
Yeah, see, I...
Oh, shit, Jazz, what are we going to do now?
Yeah. Since I started with the Rhino VHS release, and by the way, which was actually my first ever exposure to G1,
really?
The G1 like animated series, I didn't know about that, and when I was talking on boards with people and they would bring that up, I'm like, what are you talking about? I watched through it, and the only thing that was even close was, you know, that Ultra Magnus said, "Open, damn it, open," and I was like, and you know, that's really nothing. And it wasn't until the Sony BMG release, which was the Blu-ray that Jim held up, did I say Blu-ray? I meant DVD.
Yeah, DVD.
20th
anniversary.
It wasn't until then that I actually got to see it. You know, you see it in its full theatrical presentation, and it was like, oh, there's that scene everyone's talked about that I didn't think existed. And by the way, if that DVD release is a very good release of that movie.
Yes. Lots of Easter eggs in it.
And the restoration they did to it to bring out the color and all that stuff. Like, there's a scene in the VHS that as Unicron flies by, like, his details are really washed out, but in the DVD release, as he flies by, you see all these lines, you see all these little lights on him.
Hot Rod's pink.
And it really makes it pop. Hot Rod, yeah, but, you know.
They made him pink.
Oh, well. Hot Rod's pink.
Well, hey, Brett.
He's a fan of the salmon.
Yeah. Hey, Brett, when you got your VHS, did you happen to get yours for that little mail order promotion they were having that you bought a figure and sent in the money and the proof of purchase for $350 you got the VHS?
Let's see, the movie came out in 86.
Yep.
You figure it went to VHS, what, a year later?
I think that was approximately about how long it used to take.
They didn't do the, and we had this discussion, back and forth about, you know, was Transformers the first, you know, animated that went made to the movies, and actually it's not. Believe it or not, Care Bears beat it by a year. And I remember, and I even said to him, I said, well, back then in the early 80s, they didn't do that directed to VHS. That came later.
Yeah.
So the flip time from a movie to owning it on video was almost a year.
Well, I mean, even in the 90s it was like a year to 2 years.
Well, it depends on how well it did, how long it stayed, and they held on to the rights until they milked it, this, that, and the other.
Disney used to do that a lot, with like Aladdin, Beauty and the Beast, Lion King, and all those.
Right, but now you know as well as I do, not only did they do direct to home, but they have, I mean, how many movies are made that go, never see the theatrical, they go straight to,
yep,
to DVD or whatever your format you want to call it.
And
but getting back to your question, the answer would be no, and that's because I didn't see the movie until well in the 90s.
Oh, okay.
I didn't see it till much, much later.
Basically, you saw it after Japan.
Oh, yeah. It was actually after I saw Beast Wars.
Wow.
Okay.
Because Beast Wars got me back into it. I remember watching the cartoon as a kid. Then I went back and had to watch as much as I could. And then right around 2001, when the internet explosion happened. Mm-hmm. 99, 2000, somewhere around in there. That's the first time I ever heard that they swore him. I never knew it up until then.
Wow.
Okay.
So, this is a question I have. Well, as far as an impact that it had on me, not really. It was more of a, I rekindled a childhood, fondness after Beast Wars, and it just got me back into it, and I just wanted to watch everything. And you got to remember also, I actually saw the return of Optimus Prime before I saw his death. So
you must have been really confused in season 3 when suddenly everything changed.
Well, at that point, I'd been watching G.I. Joe, Transformers, Thundercats, GoBots, He-Man, and so as far as no storyline making sense, that was nothing new. So, and you know that.
Yeah. Well, just as a strange aside, I got my VHS copy from that promotion. There used to be a toy store close to me called, there was a Toys R Us, there was another place called Tons of Toys. And you bought any Transformer $5.99 or more, and you took the little tear tag off the little off the thing. You send in your receipt, $3.50, and about 6 weeks later, you got Transformers the movie on VHS. It was the family home version, and I actually remembered that right before they cussed, and my mom was in the room. And she didn't know they cussed in the movie. And she said, "What did he say?" I said, "Nothing, Mom."
I don't know. I wasn't listening.
Wow. So, yeah.
Okay, well, I do have a question, though. Because I know this movie was put on Laserdisc. Mm. Does anybody know if the Laserdisc version cussed or not?
If
nobody here knows, maybe one of our viewers does.
I will ask on Twitter right now to see if anyone might happen to know.
Like, I'm looking at a list of all the releases of the movie. I don't see a Laserdisc. I know it was not. It was released on VHS and Betamax. Mm.
Was it never released on Laserdisc?
Actually, it says in Japan it was released on Laserdisc.
Okay. I was about to say, there's no way that this movie's lasted this long and never touched Laserdisc.
Speaking of different releases and different versions and all this, that, and the other for the movie, I was kind of wondering, as far as the intro, the opening credits, there seems to be different differences between the U.S. release, the U.K. or European release, and the Japanese Matrix Forever, which is its other title, as it's known in Japan. What we got here in the States in the intro, we got kind of almost like a Superman, where the titles fly in.
It was a hair metal thing. It's all hair metal.
It was put to the Transformers theme by Lion, their interpretation of it, but the actors' names would fly in and then fly out. However, for Matrix Forever and the UK release, there was a kind of a Star Wars style scroll that kind of narrated what had been happening up to that point through the first couple of seasons. And in the UK version, from what I understand, that scrolling text was narrated by Victor Caroli, who also did the intro, It Is the Year, 2005.
Yeah.
But I was wondering, was there ever a version, or does anybody know where it was released, the version that had the Superman-style fly-in that we got in the U.S. with the Victor Caroli narration over that instead of the Star Wars-style scrolling?
I've heard about that, but I've never really researched it personally.
Well, could that possibly been Australia?
Well, the reason I was wondering that is, I don't know if you guys remember a little network known as The Hub that we had a few years ago before it became Discovery Family.
Yeah.
They aired several times the Transformers the movie, and that's the version that they ran on The Hub. It had the profanity in it, if I recall.
Wow.
But the opening to that was the U.S. intro with the flying in and out of the actors' names, but it had Victor Caroli's narration over the audio And I had never seen that before. And it just kind of blew my mind. So I didn't know if that was a new thing they did for the hub or if that version was released, like you said, maybe in Australia or some other market that I wasn't aware of.
I was thinking possibly Australia.
Yeah.
But I mean, because the UK tends to do some stuff that's different, but mm-hmm. I've heard people in Australia get things slightly different than what they did. So
yeah,
it's a possibility.
But I'll actually have to go back and watch it. Back when I had Time Warner Cable, I had it on DVR, and before I ended my relationship with Time Warner, I actually got out the old VHS and VCR and recorded it for posterity. So, yeah.
Well, as another aside, because I'm an old man rambling at times, I didn't have a VCR when I was younger. They were very expensive at the time.
Hmm.
And I wanted these episodes for posterity, like you, because I wanted to go back and play them when they were airing.
Sure.
So I have season 1, season 2, and season 3 on audio tape. I stuck a cassette recorder, a mono cassette recorder, up at the television, and for all the first 3 seasons and Rebirth, I recorded everything to audio tape.
That's fantastic. That's like the 1930s version of G1.
That's awesome.
So basically, you know, I'd be rearranging my collection, and I'd have the episodes playing on cassette tape, out of my player, and I had a boombox at the time that you could adjust the balance. So uh-huh. I can make fake stereo by adjusting the balance on, and I could have like. Aerial Assault and Stereo, and I'd be rearranging my collection and playing the episodes on cassette tape.
You remember back in the day when we used to actually make mixtapes? I would do a DJ kind of thing in the middle, uh-huh. like in between songs, or I would like come up with some stupid commercial.
Here's something that's cool that I think you will probably understand better than anyone. I actually had 2 copies of the Transformers movie soundtrack on cassette. Mm-hmm. My player, my boombox at the time, would play both at the same time. I put both cassettes in each side, hit play, got that echo effect from the 2 songs playing at the same time, and recorded to a 3rd cassette player I had. It sounded awesome.
That's dedication. That is dedication.
But unfortunately, that tape disintegrated years ago, and what few boomboxes you find nowadays only have 1 cassette box, mm-hmm. if they even have a cassette player, and if they have 2 cassette players, it's only 1 at a time.
Yeah.
So I can't.
This is a question I've got. I know we're supposed to, and they were talking about this, I think, a couple of years ago. The guy that actually did all the music for the original Transformers movie, isn't he supposed to be releasing this entire thing soon?
Vince DiCola?
Yes. Or has it already been released?
I'm pretty sure he's released a good portion of it with the BotCon 97 CDs.
Yeah.
As far as absolutely
can you
everything,
get those through iTunes, though?
I'm not sure.
You're talking about a soundtrack?
Yeah, the soundtrack to the original Transformers movie. All that electric hair metal and synthesizers.
Is most of that on the...
Or the Protoform Sessions. The Protoform Sessions was another thing that was released. That might have the rest of them.
I know it doesn't have everything, but there is a soundtrack release that has been released.
Does anybody have a link to that? Because, I mean, it'd be kind of cool to maybe possibly link this even on our Facebook for folks, too.
Well, because I know I have it on my Kindle Fire for free for having Amazon Prime and it has like the music that like free titles you can download, and I actually downloaded that the movie soundtrack.
Okay.
Well, I've got the soundtrack on CD. I still have it on cassette, mm-hmm. and I have it on vinyl.
Nice.
When I went to college at UNC Wilmington, there was a comic book store down there called Memory Lane Comics. I went there for almost 2.5 years. While I was in college down there. Mm-hmm. And the last time I went there before I left college after graduation, I was killing time because I had nothing to do until graduation, and I was going through the records. They had that copy of Transformers the movie there for 2.5 years. because he put a date on it on when it came into the store, mm-hmm. and I never saw it in 2.5 years of going to that comic book store. I got it for $2.
Wow.
So now, and they recently re-released that record on vinyl that you can get at Amazon.
Mm-hmm.
If you have a record player, you can get that on vinyl if you want.
Now, is that a 45 or what is that?
It's full size, whichever one that is.
Okay. I was thinking there was the 45.
Yeah, I'll see if I can't find a link in that way. I'll share the link on the.
Okay.
Real quick.
Now, something else that the Transformers the movie did, we didn't really necessarily touch on it. While it killed off a lot of our characters from the first couple of seasons, it also introduced a lot of characters that were completely new, like Rekkar the Junkion, for instance, and his compatriots. They would take damage, transform into motorcycle mode, and ride each other. And if they wrecked, they would swap places. Okay, Thundercracker just died. RC was new. We'd seen female Transformers before, but never in an A-list position. So many others. Hot Rod, for instance, just kind of out of nowhere. Was there any of these new characters that you guys think really stood out?
Cup. I loved Cup, just because he was just like the hard, he wasn't in any of the other cartoons until that movie, and I was like, who's this guy? He's like the badass sergeant. He's cool. I like him. I just like the guy. I thought he was cool.
Yes.
Well, hey Brett, watching it later than the rest of us, when you went back and saw it, did you finally realize who these characters were, other people were talking about in other media, or did you already be aware of them before you saw the movie?
Well, my interactions with them were mostly with the toys. So, like Rekkar, Cup, Blur, all those, I remember it from the toys. So, like, RC, I knew nothing about that. Because
there was no toy.
There was no toy, exactly. So, I mean, look at the bios, and honestly, I think I was sitting here thinking about it, and I think I read the comic before I saw it.
The movie, the Marvel movie adaptation.
Yeah, yeah, I think I did. So there was a lot of differences than when I saw the movie. But as far as the characters and everything, I had a grasp of them. I had no idea that Eric Idle was one of the voice actors. I mean, I had no idea. You picture when you're playing with the toys and everything, you picture them sounding this way or this way. But that one I never knew until I actually saw the movie. Even Cup and Blur, never thought it would be John Machida. Never, just didn't have that until after I saw the movie. So, a little different perspective. It's not like some of us who are fortunate enough to have seen the movie, then get the toy, and then know, hey, this is what this is supposed to be. Mine was kind of backwards.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I mean, that's understandable because, like you were saying, Beast Wars got a lot of the guys that got out of the fandom at an earlier age. Got him right back into it. So, I mean, if it wasn't for Beast Wars, a lot of Transformer fans now just wouldn't even. Well, they probably would have jumped on the bandwagon when the live action thing came out because you heard about all this, but really not much really brought them into it.
I'll be honest with you.
even after having seen all these wonderful movies, if it wasn't for Beast Wars, I would not have amassed all this crap.
Yeah. Hey, Brett, I can't hand you a napkin through the screen to get up that sarcasm that you're dripping everywhere. just be careful, but... don't slip. No, I mean, when you hear, when people who do not understand, again, it's the whole, if you're there watching the history unfold, you have a greater sense of investment seeing how all this stuff worked out, rather than going back and looking at it after it's been done, you know, after it's all been said and done, we did, you know. But when we say Beast Wars saved Transformers, we are not embellishing. G2, in some cases, was a failure as far as resurrecting the line, but we did get a lot of characters and technological improvements that we still use today. But from a... from an entity standpoint, being a thing in today's world, if it wasn't for Beast Wars, we might not have gotten the movies. Now,
I'll say that I'll contribute G2 as a building block.
Yeah.
And
I don't think you would have Beast Wars without G2. Yeah.
Right, and I'm going to say that Beast Wars was a resurrection. And I'll go on record as saying that. I think that if they went away with the line of Machine Wars, and I just don't think we would have had the movie. I think in all this, Beast Wars is important.
Yeah. And then within Beast Wars, in that 3-year run itself, if they hadn't got with Ben Yee and had sort of changed their direction to a degree, working it back into G1 to pull all these. Again, G1 was not really a term. I don't know. It might have been. It's in that same era. It might have been a term
we were. It was starting.
With. Yeah, but if they had merged Beast Wars into the G1 continuity, and it makes sense and done well, I don't think a lot of fans would be back into it. Because you get to see all this stuff with Beast Wars is happening. Mm-hmm. And right over that hill is the Ark. You talk to anyone that likes Beast Wars, and they mention their favorite episodes, Agenda 1, Agenda 2, Agenda 3. Mm-hmm. Because it's the best of Beast Wars, and you get the G1. Optimal Situation, Season 3, Part 1, Number 1, not really. It's kind of a letdown. But the Agenda Part 3, 1, 2, and 3, that is what people say got me into Beast Wars, because it ties them both together.
Right. It's connection.
Yeah.
Absolutely. And
that scene where Megatron is hovering through the Ark, and you have Optimus and the crew of the Ark in stasis, where they fail roughly in from More Than Meets the Eye Part 1.
Mm-hmm.
You realize This is legit. You know, this is not a one-off series. This Beast Wars thing, they're playing for keeps.
Even more so than that, can you remember the first time that you saw Prime look that good?
Oh God, it's. I'm wondering if they didn't
think about it all the way up to that. I mean, don't get me wrong. I love the G1 cartoon. I do.
Yeah.
I love that style of animation. But when I saw Prime in the is that CGI? No, that's not right.
Yeah.
It is? Okay.
It was.
But that format, and it was just like, that's awesome. You know, and then you got to see all the other fallen Autobots and everything, and it was just, I loved it. It was great. And yes, it does tie it all back together.
Yeah. And the thing of it is, and at that time period, only Mainframe could have pulled off that level of animation. I really don't think anyone else could have pulled that off at that time. And you said something that made me think of this. I wonder if they looked at that Prime from that moment, and that's what sparked someone's idea for Masterpiece MP01.
Looks a lot like it.
That's a big
maybe like further on down the line. I could see that.
Yeah, I mean, yeah.
Then probably not. Not immediately.
But someone at Hasbro was watching. I'm thinking someone at Hasbro was watching Beast Wars.
Well, let me ask you this: when did MP1 come out?
2004.
What was it?
It was the 20th anniversary because the United States had the release at the same time with the short stacks.
Right. And the bow damage.
Generally. Mm-hmm. An idea is usually 2 or 3 years, I would think. I can't see it being like 8-9 years. So yeah. Probably not.
I would think probably around the time of like Beast Machines or RID-1. They were probably trying to figure out what to do because things weren't looking so hot.
Yeah. It just seems to me that it seems like it'd been so perfect if they saw that prime and think, this thing looks great. Mm-hmm. We can make this thing out. Let's make this thing a thing. You know, it just...
And I can appreciate the fact that the United States release of that mold tried to mimic some of the battle damage that Optimus Prime got in the Battle of Autobot City.
That was on the wrong side.
Even so, maybe it's like the Shattered Glass version where everything's backwards. I don't know. But it was kind of a nod to that, you know, as if you know he had just got out of battle with Megatron. And he wasn't all banged up or anything. It was just some pain.
Well, you guys know there's one that everybody
forgets. Axe. Yeah. You know, he came with stuff from the movie. You knew they were looking at it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But then people don't really remember.
Well, you know.
I guess a lot of people don't think about this, but there is the dead version of that Prime, too, where he's like, all the colors are completely muted. And that one's actually probably one of the hardest ones to find because everybody that has the thing does not want to sell it.
That's where they got the idea for Man of Steel to wash out all the colors.
Well, you know, and tying into the movie, the first connected G1 or Beast Wars to G1 was the episode Possession, when Starscream took over Waspinator's body, the immortal spark of Starscream. And in that episode, they actually talk about when he was destroyed by Galvatron.
He claimed Unicron, though.
Yeah.
Well, he claimed Unicron, but then, later Black Arachnia says, it wasn't Unicron that destroyed you, it was your leader, Galvatron.
Mm-hmm.
Galvatron attacking his own troops? No!
There's a...
That's
the very first bit of G1 to leak into Beast Wars was actually the movie.
Did y'all watch that episode? Like, once y'all found that episode, did you like go back and rewatch it? Whenever it was a repeat you wouldn't miss, or if you had the video or whatever, you went back and watched it because it was just this moment of like, yes.
Actually, the first time I saw it, it was on a VHS tape from a buddy of mine, and we actually, this is about the time that TFW and TransFandom and all that was first starting up, years ago. So it gives you an idea of back when it was. We would actually take this VHS and we would pause it right as the lights flashing or whatever, and for those brief frames, you can see a G1's Starscream superimposed over Waspinator. And we would pause it, and we would critique that model. It was like, that's wrong. That doesn't go there. That's the wrong size.
You're the bad part of the fandom. We don't want you. Go away.
Yeah, that's one of the Beast Wars greats. It was included on DVD with the 10th anniversary reissue of Waspinator, and then it was homaged in the recent generations release of the Legends class Starscream that came with the Target Master Waspinator. That's the episode that was homaging. But yeah, I suppose you could say that even though I wasn't aware of it at the time, that was my first exposure to the fiction of the movie.
I got to say, though, one thing I would love to have, though, if they would ever release it, would be a movie, an 86 movie inspired Starscream that's just nothing more than the Parafeet, a crown, and a pile of ash.
Basically, as a
bus to display, like next to, you know, Combiner Wars Galvatronus or whatever.
Or
that would be awesome if they came out, you know, if they have like a masterpiece Galvatron, and that is literally like the base he stands on.
Yes.
And his foot is sitting on the crown, crushed.
Yeah. Hasbro, if you're watching this,
perfect. Yeah. And you can display it next to your pile of gold dust from G2 Slingshot.
Or Electro.
That would be a much better accessory with a toy
or Bristol than back.
Really crappy sled that's coming with Ironhide. It doesn't even attach to him. But all right.
So all that with Starscream being said, I think we might want to progress on to the larger than the moon elephant that's in the room. Probably the most radical, mind-blowing thing we saw from this film, the introduction of the Chaosbringer himself, Unicron, voiced by Orson Welles. Something that was completely and totally unheard of, a sentient planet that would devour other planets. You know, that in itself was a transformer. I mean, you know, we see it, you know, fly in, it has a couple of scenes, it talks to Megatron, turns him into, you know, Galvatron and the sweeps and all this, that, and the other. You know, and, you know, we think that's cool in itself, you know, that it devoured both moon bases, you know, we don't know what happened to Jazz, Cliffjumper, and the rest, right? And all of a sudden, Galvatron tries to use the Matrix against it, and the thing starts to open up.
Which I have to say, Jim, is not really as big of a surprise as you might think, because one of the trailers for the movie, when Victor Carroll is doing the narration on the trailers, it says, "What is the secret of the monster planet?" And Unicron's arms are opening up from the sides and swinging around. There's your secret. You see the hands. It has a robot mode.
I never saw the trailers back then. If I did, I didn't remember them.
Yeah, well, I'm saying that was probably my first major lesson in trailers. Don't watch them if you can, because right. It's sort of like How to Train Your Dragon 2. Like, oh, by the way, here's Hiccup's mom. Don't you think you should have saved that for the movie? But, I mean, it's the same thing.
That's why if a trailer is longer than, like, a minute and 30 seconds, I don't normally watch them, because it got some trailers that are almost 5 minutes long. I'm like, okay, you're just basically telling me the whole movie. Now I don't need to watch it. I'll just wait and get it off of, what, Pirate Bay or some bullshit like that, because you guys ruined it.
Exactly.
Ruined forever.
I think that was really a big problem back in the 80s and 90s. I mean, it's still a problem in the... You know, now, but
It's a big problem now.
Social media.
Well, all over the place. Look at this. I went and I saw a trailer for this movie called Upside Down, which basically was like a world wrapped around our world, and it, like, one world's inverted. Mm-hmm. And they told so much in that stupid trailer. It's like, well, why am I going to watch it? All this is a love story. You guys ruined it.
They do that. I mean, I'm not saying that they don't still do that, but, like, if you go back to, like, the early 2000s, like, in the first decade, there was never a reason to go watch a movie, because every commercial would reveal, like if it was a comedy, it would reveal all the funniest jokes. So when you went to the movie, you had nothing to laugh at. I feel like they do their best not to do that anymore. There's still that occasional movie that reveals to you the entire plot, and then you're like, well, I'm not going to see your movie now.
Yeah.
But I feel like it was far more predominant back then when... back then they used to sell... I mean, really, they made their money on the movie. They didn't make their money on the aftermarket sales. Like, nowadays, they make their money on Blu-ray sales. Or DVD sales. Back then...
Well, now, I mean,
not so much.
Well, with all the hype for certain movies, how often we get a toy on the shelf before we even see a trailer?
Yep.
That's the way it goes now, and that's the way the demographics are. And the funny thing is when you see one toy, no, it's not just one type of toy. It's this toy, and it's all the way down to almost Imaginext toys. It's like, really, do we have to go this far, dig in, to show that, oh, we need to hype up this movie is the best thing ever, and then it comes out, and everybody's like, that sucked.
Yeah, but you definitely didn't know anything about it. You definitely didn't know anything about Unicron back then, because the toys, we didn't know of its existence until what, like
97-ish, maybe? Was that the year?
I can't quite, I thought it was one of their very early botcons, wasn't it?
Yeah, I think it was. But about that, though, I mean, not only was his transformation epic, also his destruction, because it was like this long drawn out thing. You had the Autobots trying to escape, and you know, everybody get to safety in time, and you know, they were able to fly out through his eye
straight out.
But here's one thing I've always wondered, and I still kind of wonder to this day. Okay, can he separate pieces off from himself out of survival? What I mean to say is, like, you know, if he knows most of them is going to be compromised, can he do like the Autobots did with the shuttle and only detonate 3/4 of the Unicron? Because if you notice, when he's exploding, it looks like instead of trying to hold it on, it looks like he grabs his leg and just yanks it off and throws it.
I think.
And I wondered if he did that on purpose.
I think he just had a real bad case of space diarrhea.
Something.
I think the point was that I think they were trying to get across that he was starting to explode in his leg, and then it sort of like worked up. But it was never. I did watch that several times, as a kid, and wonder, you know, what he was doing when he was trying to rip his leg off.
Right. Dude, Unicron's a badass. He rips off his own leg and throws it. Who does that?
Yeah, and then he throws it at someone yelling, "Rocket kick!" Sorry.
But, exactly, right?
Here's the other
thing. That would have been better if he actually had, like, rocket... I mean, really, why couldn't they just please done, like, a rocket punch? One rocket punch out of him or something like that, just to, like, slam into freaking, like, Cybertron or something.
I don't know. He should have yelled out, "Reboot!" Reboot.
Now here's the big scene for me. The Prime dying was major. Mm-hmm. But end of the movie, Hot Rod versus Galvatron. And yep. Hot Rod grabs the Matrix, and you hear that final, what we think will be the final time we hear Optimus Prime, "Arise, Rodimus Prime." Mm-hmm. That moment is like, wow, they're actually and that's when I realized Prime is not coming back. This is a new leader for the Autobots. And Prime is not going to show up in the next 20 minutes. I didn't know how long the movie had left. I guess I'm just whatever, how long was left. Did that scene, again, I saw it as it was happening, so it had more of an impact than going back and watching it. But that scene to me just, that's what made the movie realize, holy crap, this stuff is real. When Prime's not coming back, this is a whole new ballgame.
They were always real to me.
I mean, did anyone else really love that scene as much as me, or is it just because the emotional investment I had in at the time?
I don't necessarily think that I actually read that much into it so much as I was just mesmerized by the shading and everything they used in the battle, because you had the light from the Matrix illuminating the area around it.
That was
outstanding. And Vince DiCola's work on the audio track during that scene. Yeah. Yeah, he had kind of the fast-paced Jazz is dead. Had the fast-paced organ, you know, in some parts of it. It just set it off nicely. It almost gave it kind of a spooky feel, you know, kind of a sinister. I don't want to say like Castlevania sounding, but you know what I mean.
Yeah, well, dark cavernous.
Yeah.
Exactly. But did y'all notice that Galvatron, right when Rodimus Prime emerges, the Matrix is shot from his hand. And Rodimus and Galvatron fight. Galvatron's colors didn't look quite right. they were flat. They were just, I guess it was just an animation error, but that just really like, oh my gosh, Rodimus is beating the color out of him or something. I thought about something like that at the time. But,
or maybe he just turned pale because he knew he was about like, to get his ass whooped.
Yeah. But here's something I wanted to bring up if I could. We're talking about this movie. All the great things that came from it, it has its issues, but this is a cultural milestone for Transformers as in its history. Mm. Here's the sad part. BoxOfficeMojo.com. There was no foreign release of this movie at the time. Japan did not get it until 1989. The movie only took in 5.9 million, and that's on 990 theaters in total. This movie bombed. This is why G.I. Joe did not go to theaters like Transformers did. This is also why Duke did not die as he was, spoilers, Duke was supposed to die in the G.I. Joe movie like Prime did.
He's going to make it.
Since, you know, a snake through the heart is not fatal.
Snakes. Why did it have to be snakes?
Yeah, that was a... I mean, there was so much backlash. And that's always going to be the case when... I mean, it's not so much now. I mean, you know, the death of Optimus Prime has become a... more of a joke than anything else.
Well, he keeps coming. I mean, he's come back.
Yeah, because... Let's see, what series has he died in? So Optimus Primal died. You know, Armada Prime died.
Beast Machines.
Beast Machines, he died permanently, right? Like Animated Prime, he died.
Armada?
It's become just... You know, sir,
animated.
Prime has to die in almost every series.
Comics.
But at the time, that was like,
you must die and return.
Yeah, but that was such a big shot to the leg back then that, you know, like you said, it influenced them to do things differently with other movies that they were planning to come out with. And not to mention, I think at the time when that movie came out, there was a big push towards, there was a lot of like political backlash towards it, if I recall correctly, because it was this using you know media to sell toys. It sort of was that era
selling
of
toys.
The 1980s. You know, you had sort of that. It was the war on everything,
yes,
sort of mentality of the time.
Selling toys, though, you wouldn't mean the kind of toys like we could get with Mega Toy Fan. Maximize your collection, minimize your price with MegaToyFan.com.
Who just happens to be with us tonight.
Hey!
And,
yay!
Yeah, and Brent, don't you have some like movie toys that if anyone wants to recreate that, the epic movie and say stop motion, they can get all their toys from you?
Hey.
I think all of them.
Nice. There you go. But in the rare chance that you might not be able to find that after all, which I doubt, then there's always CapturedPrey.com. Great toys, great prizes, great service.
Yeah, you know, for your RCs, for the pivotal moment when she's chasing down the shuttle.
Which did not have a G1 toy, by the way.
For your Devastator that needs to be too big to, you know, maybe you want a Devastator the size to, you know, hold up your laundry basket.
Big enough to stomp out some googly eyes.
Yeah. True.
Or if you've got a nice mock-up of Autobot City from the movie, he can pound your defenses.
Ah.
That's what he said.
Whoa!
Hey,
okay, just one little question.
They're all the way in.
Do you guys think a third party should make rocket punches for him?
No,
I would be okay with that.
No.
I want spring loaded fists for him. Please, somebody make those.
I really.
So that way, you got the interchangeable drill, and then you can put like that.
Yeah.
Twin gun thing that used to go on, you know, okay, Beastmasters. Put it on there. Come on, man.
If he gets the drill hand, you have to have a cape and a crown for zone. But you have to have all of it. Any one part won't work.
I have some conditions. I want that. If they were to do this, a third party were to do, you know, the zone armor and, you know, all this, that, and the other with the launching fists, my requirements would be figure a way to swap out and give him some purple thighs with the little rockets on the hips and the head laser.
Yes, the head laser.
See, I never had Devastator with the head laser displayed because I thought it was stupid. And he never had it. He never used it in the cartoon, so it's just something
that,
I didn't.
That's even. The thing, though, is for me, the toys.
Back, well, that's all it was.
For me, the toys were more prevalent for me than the cartoon was. And so when I see a Devastator, I expect that head laser. I expect, you know, the little tabs on the wrist for, you know, to launch the rockets.
Did you say blasphemy, Brett?
I sure as hell did.
Oh.
Oh, my God.
Blaster for me?
No.
What? Oh.
This is my question, though.
Oh, come on. Oh, I never put the little head. That's what it's for.
But it doesn't.
It was part of it. I don't care if it was in the show or not. It was there.
It looks terrible. It throws off. It does. I never put it on there. Maybe one time it's like, oh, that's crap.
Well, this is my question. Is back when Hasbro made this thing, basically, you know, everybody knows it was stolen from the Diaclone version. Why on God's green earth didn't they just remold the head or just mold in that hole and not include that gun thing if people were going to rage about it like that?
Wait a minute. I'm going to answer this one.
Okay.
You're asking me why a toy company back in the 80s would spend extra money to change and remold something that they could just slap and paste and say, this is our rendition of this character you saw in the cartoon. Think about what you're saying.
Plus, they needed as much product on the shelf at the time because everything was selling like crazy.
Think about it. Toy Box. What was the other one? There was three. Bandai. And Takara, they were grabbing anything that transformed from anywhere. We're lucky we didn't get GoBot molds or Robo Machine in there.
I would have been okay with that.
They grabbed from everywhere.
Yeah, because see, they got.
Why we got it.
You got Skyfire from Macross, Omega Supreme from Toy Box. You had the Deluxe Decepticons. From
Takara,
but it was a different show.
Inferno.
If I pronounce it wrong, it's Terugatsu. Actually the name of the company.
Yeah.
Inferno and Grapple, those were Diaclone, but they were from like some weird cartoon or something like that. That had nothing to do with it.
They were still licensed through Takara.
Yeah. Car. Roadbuster, Whirl, the Jumpstarters.
All the mini bots.
I was trying to remember Shockwave. Shockwave also was brought from another company.
Yeah.
Yep. The mini bots
were too. That was Toy Box too, wasn't it? Shockwave?
I think it was. I think they were both Toy Box.
Uh-huh.
Thought so. Well, the mini bots, they were Diaclone, but they weren't like part of. They were part of like a subdivision of it, and the same thing with like Soundwave and Blaster and all that.
Well, that's what I was gonna say. Like,
Megatron
or all the cassettes were Microchange. I mean, they all came from everywhere. My point being is back in the 80s, they were about acquiring and redistributing to make the money, not putting more money into remolding.
Getting the most bang for their buck.
You would not have gotten that.
Okay, well then, here's another question then. Since we have reissues that come out, that reissue that came out of him in the cartoon accurate colors, did it have the laser head or not? Because I know they remolded the head.
I believe so.
For which one?
Devastator.
The Devastator that came out with it had like the darker purple, the Encore.
Are you talking about the anime release or the?
Yeah, the animated release. Yes.
Right.
Basically, Plasticon he wants his Devastator with friggin' lasers on his head.
Yes.
No, I don't.
Groovy.
He doesn't want them. I
take
do.
Them off. I kept mine off.
That's what she said.
Blasphemy.
No. I keep it off of him. Now, for the G2, that's fine. But also, for my Diaclone, that's fine. But for him, no. He stands there without it.
Okay, well, I think we can all agree, as far as the Devastator head laser, is, you know, head like a hole, black as your soul, we'd rather die than give you control over Devastator's head.
And on that note.
Get out, everybody!
So we're at about 2 hours, so we're going to go ahead and wrap it up.
One thing real quick.
Go ahead.
I know Paul Eiding listens to the show. He was the voice of Perceptor. This is to him to tell anyone else that was in the G1 movie as a voice actor, thank you for all your hard work. I've heard behind the scenes was very difficult, but I'm thanking y'all personally for making that movie an important part of my childhood, and it means a lot to me that a lot of y'all are still with us in the fandom. Thank you very much.
Hear, hear.
I think that goes across the board, Don. I mean, that affects everybody that has grown up with Transformers and even grown up with the movieverse stuff, because some of those actors were brought right back into that too. Mm-hmm. So, yes.
I just want to thank you
every voice actor out there that was involved.
Yes, Paul, Greg, Sue, John, Pete, Frank, all of them. Scatman, Buster.
Mr. Souls.
Yes. Amazing.
Sorry, Michael. I didn't mean to interrupt. I just wanted to. I thought of that earlier in a senior moment. I forgot about it. So
it's all right. All right. Well, this has been TFYLP. I want to go ahead and remind everyone we're doing a question of the day on Twitter. So follow us on Twitter. It's at TFYLP. And join our Facebook. Lots of our Facebook group. There's a lot of good destructive conversations.
Yes. We're releasing instructions that you can't get on there.
Exactly. But a lot of good discussions there daily, and it's a lot of fun. So I've been your host, Cyburn 2, with Don, Jim, Jason, and Brett. We're seeing you next week.
I thought you were made of sterner stuff.
Megatron must be stopped no matter the cost.
G2 forever!
We talk TV!
This has been Transformers for Your Listening Pleasure, a presentation of TFTalk.net. We'd like to thank you for listening and ask that you please rate us on your favorite podcast outlet and share us with your friends. Be sure to follow us on Twitter at TFYLP. Email us at podcast@TFYLP.com. This is Paul Eiding, and on behalf of TFYLP, we'd like to thank you again for listening. And we hope you'll join us next time for another TFYLP.